When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Stu and Blake.
Hello. Before we start this episode of the MMA Fan Podcast, we need to tell you about our sponsor, Free Train. Free Train do these fantastic running vests for you to run in, hit the bag in, and they keep your phone close to your chest. No more do you need to have your phone rumbling around in your pocket when you run or at an awkward angle on your arm. You can keep it on your chest with easy access to your phone whenever you go training. And what can the people do, Stu, if they want to get a vest?
Simple. Head over to www.freetrain.com. Have a look. See what you like. And when you pop it in the basket, just before you check out, pop in the code MMA fan, save yourself 10%. I mean, don't ever let it be said we don't spoil you here on this podcast. www.freetrain.com. Go check them out.
Excellent stuff. Right, on with the show.
Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but we've got another sponsor to tell you about. Feel Supreme. They're a nationally recognised brand who offer only the very highest quality of natural supplements. Their extensive range includes a range of medicinal mushrooms, nootropics, anti-aging products, gut support products, green powders, vitamins, and much more.
Yep, they've worked with fighters from all the top promotions, including UFC, Bellator, Brave, and Cage Warriors, with a solid reputation of providing results. So check them out on Instagram, which is at feel_supreme. Or their website, www.feelsupreme.co.uk, and make sure you use the code MMAFAN for a cool 15% off your first order. Don't say we don't spoil you.
Hello, and welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. I'm Stu Whiffin, sitting opposite me for the first time in a while. Blake Harrison, hello.
How you doing, man? You good?
Yeah, all right. It feels a little weird. I mean, we had a tiny little catch up on Zoom a few days ago, but we haven't actually recorded a podcast for, what was the last one we done?
Was it Dan Hardy?
The Cage Warriors. Oh, no. It might have been.
Was it Dan Hardy or the Cage Warriors ones? I don't know.
One of them.
But yeah, so I've been busy in the theatre.
Tell me about it.
Darling.
Give me an update. What's been happening?
It's been good. We've had some really good reviews. The Guardian gave us 4 stars. Not too shabby, darling. Not too shabby. So, there's a guy outside my house just, I don't know what he's doing, drilling something, so you might be able to hear that. But, and actually drilling. That's not like a euphemism for doing anything kind of nasty.
let's plug the play. I mean, what's it called?
It's called A Place for We. And it's all about kind of gentrification and immigration and how that changed kind of the face of London. So you've got like modern day gentrification happening in Brixton, affecting kind of a lot of the Caribbean communities there, and how, the kind of people with more wealth are coming into those areas now and changing them. Some would say regenerating, but some would say it's gentrifying it. And then you kind of see other aspects that we go back in time to the 70s, where the kind of there was like the white flight out of places like Brixton, and when the kind of Windrush generation came into those areas. So we kind of touch on all of that stuff, and it's also about kind of like, you know, the kind of like family legacies that you leave, and you know, all that kind of stuff. It's interesting stuff, and There's a lot of like moving stuff in it as well. It's like it's technically it's a comedy. It's written by a stand-up comedian called Archie Maddox, so it is funny. But there's a lot of moving stuff in there. Conflict between like a father and son in the first half that are from Trinidad, and the son's like, "I'm a Londoner. I don't feel like a Trinidadian, but I don't feel English. I don't really know where I belong," and he wants to move away from this kind of traditional way that they do funerals there because they're not earning any money, and there's a lot of conflict between the father and son, the father trying to hold on to their kind of traditions and culture and all that. And then in the second half, I come into it a bit more as a pub landlord in the 70s. I wear some very sexy flares and they're very tight around the old caboose. And nice. Yes, that's what the people want. I'm of like Irish heritage, and our pub is kind of going to be taken over by someone else. And I'm kind of, you know, five generations of history feel like they've just gone up in smoke because he's lost his pub to other people. But him and his wife are also dealing with a family tragedy as well. So there's conflict and problems there as well. So it's kind of got this kind of wide scope of like dealing with political issues and social issues. But also there's very much like within that, there's like that kind of kitchen sink drama, as it were, as well. So yeah, it's got a bit of everything in there. And as I say, the themes and everything make it sound like quite a kind of like socio-political drama.
Definitely.
But it's written by a stand-up comedian, so it is funny. So check out my Instagram page. There's a few trailers and bits on there, and like you'll see if you like it. And there's a link in my bio for tickets.
Where is it on?
It's on at the Park Theatre in Finsbury Park, and it's the first thing that they have done there, like proper run of a play since COVID. So obviously everything's been shut down for like 18 months. So it's to be back on stage for me personally is just like an amazing thing. After everything that happened with COVID, but also I think for the whole building, for everyone there, it's just this huge thing. Cause there was a time when people thought, are we done? Is it, are we not going to come back? Because these smaller theatres, a lot of them are also charities. The Park Theatre is also a charity, and they do charitable work within their community and stuff. And, you know, I think they were very concerned because they don't have, like, it's all right if you're in the West End and you, I mean, they still were hit, don't get me wrong, but, you know, they were, had huge resources of money behind them, producers and stuff that, you know, they're minted, so they're going to be all right. Whereas these smaller theatres, it was very dicey. They might have just completely gone under. And luckily for the Park Theatre, and thankfully they haven't, and they're putting on stuff and putting on good, important work as well.
Excellent, man. Like,
there you go, little plug. I didn't think you were going to ask me about it, so I hope I've sold the show well enough. But you know,
absolutely, yeah. Absolutely, it's good to have a catch up. And I guess obviously we're always talking about MMA. It's always nice to get a little bit of backstory as to why. I mean, obviously we've been releasing episodes, but we'd kind of banked a load because we knew you was going to be, you know, rehearsing absolutely.
And your nightclub's open.
Yes.
You're finally open. Let's have a people are going to fast forward this. We've got about a minute of listening to Stu talk about his club. Then we'll get on to MMA, blah, blah, blah.
All right.
Stu, the club, how's things going?
Oh, it's been great. Because, I mean, the main thing that's really good is you're getting to reconnect with people. I've had this club for nearly 30 years. So, see, so many of your regulars that you haven't seen for 2 years. And then what's been really mad is over that two, it's not really mad, but like what's been wonderful is over the last 2 years, so many youngsters have turned 18 that have never experienced going to a nightclub. So they're all coming for the first time. And, you know, experiencing my venue, the Pink Toothbrush, which is very different from a lot of your kind of high street nightclubs. It's very alternative and it's a bit of a safe haven for the weird and wonderful, and seeing all of these youngsters come in and experience it for the first time is lovely. That's been a real joy, mate. But okay, well look, the purpose of this interview, this episode, I guess, was to just have a catch up really, and obviously we've chatted about what me and you have been up to, but boy oh boy, it's been a busy few weeks in the world of MMA, right?
Oh, man, it's been massive. So, I mean, obviously, and typically, not to keep bringing up the play, but typically now they've released like three, there's like three or four cards over the next few weeks and last week as well or whatever.
Yep.
where they're all at like British standard time, like 7 p.m., 9 p.m., all that kind of stuff. I'm doing a fucking play. I can't watch it. I'm there in my dressing room with my iPad trying to watch some of the prelims and stuff. And then like a lot of my big stuff happens in the second act. So I don't want to get too distracted before that. So I have to, I'll watch maybe a prelim or two. Then I have to shut it all down, sort of get myself in the zone and that. And then I can't watch anything until well afterwards when I'm like on the train home or something like that. It's an absolute, it's so typical that now they've decided to do cards that are at a good UK time and I can't watch them properly.
And not just that. I mean, we'll touch on some of the recent cards, and we'll kick off talking about one of the epic UFC cards of recent. But obviously, we had tickets for the Cage Warriors trilogy as well, and you couldn't make that because of the play. So, yeah. I mean, we'll talk about that anyway because what a trilogy that was. But should we? I mean, we're going to touch on the recent news about John Jones and Chuck Liddell, which I guess isn't as exciting and as positive as some of the other stuff we're going to be talking about today. So should we kick off with 266?
Yeah, let's kick off with something positive. We'll move on to the negative and hopefully we won't linger on it too long. Yeah. But yeah, the positives. UFC 266, I know it was a few weeks ago now, and I know that MMA moves at such a rapid pace that you'll probably think, oh, 266, was that like 2019? No, it was only about 2 or 3 weeks ago. But we haven't been able to speak about it because I've been so busy and you've been busy. And what an epic card it was. And I mean, we can't start anywhere else. And we're not going to linger on it too long because we know it's sort of old news now. But Jesus Christ, that main event, Volkanovski Ortega, was...
Sorry, full name. Full name, our mate, Volkanovski.
Our mate. Our mate.
Former guest.
Volkanovski and Brian Ortega. I mean, an incredible fight. Got to be contender easy for fight of the year. I know we've still got a little bit left, but that is fighting. And round three in particular. I mean, my in-laws were over and I was like, said, I have to watch this fight. And even they got into it. And like my mother-in-law was a bit like, oh no, oh don't hit him. Oh, why are they doing this? But my father-in-law was actually like, oh God, that's really good. And my wife, because she's like, I've kind of dragged her into it a little bit.
Yeah.
She's kind of willing, and then anyone we interview, she's got a bit of a connection with now. She's like, oh, yeah, they were nice to my husband, so I like them. you know, and I got her to watch The Ultimate Fighter. She was well into The Ultimate Fighter, and she was very much Team Volkanovski, wasn't a big fan of Ortega. And so she was, you know, rooting for Volkanovski. And every time, that round three, that guillotine was so tight, and he got through it, and we were all jumping off the sofa going, no, please, no. And then he gets out the guillotine. And I think, right, just get to your feet. Just get to your feet. And he doesn't. He re-engages and he's hitting the ground and pound. And then Ortega locks up a triangle and you're like, no, Alex, you fucked it. Why didn't you just stand up? And then he gets out of that. And then he keeps going.
You know, these aren't just guillotines and triangles from anyone. They're off of Brian Ortega.
I mean, it's T-City, Triangle City. That's his name. He was in like his special move.
Yeah. And I mean, I think they said that... I think Volk said he could hear himself like gurgling as like the air was being like choked out of him. And just, now you just think, fucking hell, man, he's made of stone. Just, yeah. I mean, props to Ortega as well. Like, oh, yeah. You know, I mean, I didn't think he come across too well on The Ultimate Fighter. I was always a fan of Ortega. Yeah. I'm still a fan of his fight style, but I didn't think he'd come across too well. And I think... people are now getting to love Volkanovski because he's as down to earth as it gets, isn't he? I mean, he was such a joy when we had him on. And, you know, what an absolute warrior. That performance was just different level. And he looked, aside from that round, you know, the guillotine and the triangle, like it was a dominant performance, wasn't it? He looked just different level, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, look... he took some risks as well. I think following Ortega to the ground, that's just ballsy, brave. Some might say a bit stupid, but I mean, he done it. And the ground and pound he left on him at the end of round three. I mean, that's one thing that like I've seen a lot of memes about it, but I've not necessarily heard enough people talking about. Should that fight have been stopped?
Was it round three, Blake, when... the buzzer went And he was on his back laying there, yes. Ortega. Because I thought Ortega thought the fight had been stopped. That was my initial thought when I saw that. I thought, right. Oh, does Ortega think that's been stopped? Because it looked like he'd had enough at that point. I think, obviously, in that round, he'd given his A game, yeah. And it hadn't worked. And that must have just broke him mentally.
I mean, it was just, there was so many heavy shots that he took. His face was just blown up. And, I mean, unbelievable grit and heart. I mean, for him to do that, and then I think lose the fourth round, but then I think he won the fifth round.
Fifth round, absolutely mental.
But going back to that third round, it was back and forth. Then he had the two very, very close submissions, but then Volkanovski finished with that really intense ground and pound. Mm. And then Ortega was lying flat on his back, and he was lifted up onto his stool by his corner, which, from what I've heard, that's not legal. You have to sit yourself down on the stool. You're not allowed to be picked up and put on a stool. So immediately at that point, alarm bell should be ringing. And I think, was it Herb Dean? I think it was Herb Dean. I think he should be looking at that going, I don't think so. And I know that they then brought the doctor in and they did the whole counting on the fingers. But I think if he's already been put on his stool by someone after being lying flat on his back at the end of the round, should that be it? Should that be an immediate, you haven't made it back to your stool, mate. You're done. And that would have, you know, it would have robbed fans of an extra two rounds of an incredible fight. But would it have saved Brian Ortega's brain cells effectively? You know, did he go through some unnecessary damage despite winning the fifth round?
Yeah.
When maybe he could have been saved that. And we always have to think about fighter safety. That has to be the number one priority. And even when he was like holding up his fingers and asking him how many fingers he was holding, it didn't look like he was properly answering or I don't know. It all seemed a bit strange. It seemed like maybe, I think there was definitely a case for the fight to have been stopped at the end of that third round because Ortega didn't seem as coherent as he should have been and again, didn't make it back to his own stall.
He did get a second wind in that fifth round, though. He come alive, and I think Volk was blowing a little bit in that last round. I think, and understandably so.
Yeah.
But I think if I remember rightly, you know, like you say, it was a few weeks ago now. But I think Volk kept having a couple of glances up at the clock.
He definitely did. I remember it. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think you know, no wonder he would have been absolutely blowing out of his arse. But yeah, I don't know where Ortega pulled that last bit of gas from, but yeah, he all of a sudden he was super game in that fifth round, and yeah, and I think it just made for just an epic fight. If you want to showcase, you know, MMA to people, that fight is another just absolute, like, this is what you get when MMA is delivering on all points. This is the kind of shit you get, and oh, glorious, and yeah, and massive love to Volk for winning. What a champ!
Yeah, love him. Love Volk. Great. It seems like just such a, as you said earlier, down to earth, lovely bloke. And he seems now to be getting the respect he deserved. Because there was a lot of negativity towards Volk, I think particularly from Americans, because he'd beaten Max Holloway twice. And Max Holloway, we all love Max Holloway. There's not an MMA fan out there that's not a Max Holloway fan. And it wasn't Volk's fault that he got the decisions. I mean, I think he clearly won the first fight. I know the second fight was very, very close. I'd have to rewatch it before I said, oh no, Volk definitely won, or Max, I think, actually won that and the judges got it wrong.
Volk weren't a judge, though.
No, exactly. Volk's gone out there and done the business. I think from what I remember, he lost the first fight. I think he won clearly. Second fight, I think he lost the first two rounds and then made adjustments and then did definitely win at least two of the rounds after that, I think. And then, I don't know, I'd have to rewatch that fight.
Yeah,
it might be an interesting thing for us to do.
I remember it being.
But it was close. It was close. I don't think it was ever a robbery or anything like that. But some people just go down that route because they're such big Max Holloway fans. And it wasn't his fault. So he didn't get the respect he deserved because everyone thought, oh no, Holloway's the real champ, blah, blah, blah. No, Volkanovski is the champ and he thoroughly deserves everyone's respect and all the congratulations he's getting now. And, you know, he's got to be up there on the pound-for-pound list. I know Kamaru Usman's amazing. We'll get on to John Jones. I'm not considering him involved in any rankings at the moment. But Volkanovski's right up there, right up there, because he's, you know, it's all well and good. Izzy's obviously up there in terms of the middleweight division, but he did lose to Blachowicz. And I would argue the middleweight division, the calibre of it is nowhere near as good as the calibre of the featherweight division. Featherweight and bantamweight for me are just ridiculous at the moment. And for Volkanovski to have beaten like your Chad Mendezes, Jose Aldo, who we now see at 35 doing incredible things, and then Max Holloway twice. To beat Aldo and then Holloway twice, whether or not you agree with the second decision, he's beat him twice. And then go on and beat Brian Ortega, who everyone thought was like, outside of Holloway and maybe Volkanovski, was like the next best featherweight by a bit of a distance. I mean, yeah, you've got to start putting a lot of respect on his name.
And a lot of respect on City Kickboxing, man. There's some bad asses coming out of there now. Did you see, just touching on that when I was waiting for the, after the prelims to the main car for Cage Warriors, they were running some stuff about some short films about City Kickboxing. Did you watch that?
No.
Oh, it's great. Really good. Talking about Volk and Izzy Hooker and just so many beasts that are coming out of that gym at the moment. Yeah, it's a really good, it's about 15 minutes. I'm sure it'll be on Fight Pass, but yeah, well worth a watch
good.
That. Well, look, on 266, I mean, there's other fights which, you know, we could end up making this a post 266, and that's not really kind of the plan today. Touch on a couple, I suppose. Obviously, I know we're going to talk a little bit more at length about Robbie and Nick, but in between that was Valentina and Lauren Murphy. For me, didn't excite me that fight. I thought Valentina made a bit of a meal out of it. I think it could have been finished a lot quicker. It sounds horrible when you talk about people getting in the cage with Valentina, but it felt like a bit of a lamb to the slaughter, that one. I didn't feel that Lauren Murphy was ever going to take that title.
No, I feel like we could say that about pretty much the whole flyweight division at the moment. Really? Obviously, there's some youngsters coming through that, given a couple of years, might be able to challenge. But at the moment, it does. It feels very much like Nunes at 35. You know, it is just, it feels a bit lamb to the slaughter, as you say. One thing I would say that I'm really impressed with was how Lauren Murphy's taken that defeat. Just really, really classy. Really well. She effectively just came out and said, within a first round, she realised, oh shit, this woman's level's above me. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but that's basically what she's come out and said.
Yeah.
And she was just like, and she just tried to tough it out and tried to do her best. And I've got all the respect in the world for Lauren Murphy for doing that and coming out with something like that, because you just go, yeah, because we can see it. And some people would come out with excuses, or I had a bad weight cut, or I had this, or I had that, or, oh, if you give me one more shot, I know I could get it right. And she's just come out and gone, oh, no, she's levels above.
She's
just too good. And it's true, and we all see it. And I respect Lauren Murphy so much for just coming out and saying that truthfully and just being humble, because Lauren Murphy's still a problem for a lot of people in that flyweight division.
Yeah.
Lauren Murphy is a top flyweight.
Yeah. But there's some amazing fights in that division, but none of them are against Chev.
Yeah, no, that's it. With Shevchenko, you're just going, oh, let's watch this amazing fighter. How long will it take for her to just dispatch this next opponent? Will she do it stylistically? Like, what? How will this go?
Yeah.
It's not... And it, for me, that never excites me as much. And I know that we should love watching greatness. You know, these are people that might go down as the Valentina Shevchenko already is, because the flyweight division's like not existed for very long. But in decades to come, we might be looking back and go, God, do you remember when Valentina Shevchenko was around? Like, whoever's champion now in 2040, yeah, she wouldn't have held a candle to Valentina Shevchenko. No, we had the glory days of Valentina Shevchenko. So we should be embracing that. But as a fan of MMA, what I want is a fight to come up where I go, oh God, I have no idea which way this is going to go. I want to see the fights where I'm like, I would never want to bet on this fight, because you just don't know. And that's what really excites me. And unfortunately, the flyweight division with Valentina at the helm is not that.
The gap's too big, isn't it?
Gap's too big. But on to Nick Diaz and Robbie Lawler.
I was so excited, Blake. I was so excited to see this fight. Everyone loves a Diaz. Nick Diaz back in the octagon? Yes, please. Robbie Lawler back in the octagon? Yes, please. The fact that they're going... I mean, and the thing was as well, there was very little given away in the lead up to this as well. Media was pretty closed on Nick, and what you had seen of him, he was, I guess, what we normally expect from Nick Diaz doing media, uninterested, despondent, a bit down in the mouth about it all, really. And he was, you know, it was quite. I mean, I know on our WhatsApp group, and I think I spoke to Pip about it. He seemed a bit like down, and I'm sure it was Pip. That's Nick Diaz, you know. That's Nick Diaz chatting. You know, he doesn't necessarily like the game, but he likes the fight. I think that was the quote. And yes. Or like the sport, but yeah, likes the fight. And and you know, he's always been open about that. But yeah, it just felt, I don't know. And I hoped. I mean, I thought once he got in the octagon and that buzzer went, I thought he was going to flick the finger like he did with Anderson, totally respectful to Anderson, right up until that buzzer went, and then started like trying to get in their head and started like playing games and stuff like that. Mm. I kind of thought that was going to happen. It didn't. I mean, he was throwing, and he was throwing, you know, punches in bunches. I thought, physique-wise, I thought Robbie looked great. I didn't think Nick looked great. I thought they both went it for a few rounds. And then, yeah, I mean, before we get on to how it finished, like, what was your kind of take on it?
So I think I missed a lot of the kind of prime Diaz years. And I saw Sean Sheehan, our friend Sean Sheehan, saying on a tweet, it's so funny seeing people experience Nick Diaz interviews for the first time, effectively like alluding to what you just said, that like,
yeah,
that's Nick Diaz in interviews.
Yeah.
But I have to say, I was suckered in to the, I felt bad about it.
Was you that sent the message, yeah, I think, on our thread.
His interview with Brett Okamoto on ESPN.
That was it.
Concerned me. I was like, this isn't just a sort of Nick. This didn't feel like just a sort of Nick Diaz, oh, I hate the fight game, oh, this is a load of bollocks, why should I fight? I'm not excited for fights. Why would I be excited about going in there? It's like a scary thing, whatever. This felt more like a man that seemed slightly troubled. Like maybe he was having financial issues and it was the only way to do it, or maybe he was sort of pushed into it or manipulated into it or something like that. And like he was saying, I don't know why this fight's even happening and stuff like that. And that really concerned me. And maybe I was just kind of suckered in as someone that hasn't experienced a huge amount of kind of Diaz interviews before. But yeah, it concerned me. And I, when he first came out in that first round through some weird kick, that I was like, that looked awful. And obviously there was the whole weight change as well. Like, it was meant to be a welterweight fight. And a few days beforehand, it gets changed to a middleweight fight. Robbie Lawler, the reason he looked good is he was cutting for a welterweight fight and then went, oh, now you've got to change it. Diaz, it makes you think, was he training properly? I mean, this is a man that does triathlons and all that kind of stuff. He's usually very, very fit. I'm sure he's in the gym regularly. But to do that on a few days' notice makes me think, well, your commitment's not in this, is it? To go from, I'm not going to cut the 15 pounds extra on just a few days' notice, or only realize at that point I'm not going to make the weight. That's concerning, I think. That's never a good sign. So yeah, and then he came out and I think he looked bad for the first minute, and then he seemed to fall into his stride a bit, and we actually ended up getting quite a fun fight. And he was doing the Nick Diaz, you know, punches in bunches, some crisp hands and boxings, rip into the body. And I thought it was that he actually made a good account of himself. And, you know, I was watching that going, this welterweight Legends League has got some legs. It's got some legs. We need to do it. But I
didn't think he was ever going to win. I thought Robbie just looked like better.
Yeah, I was going into that fight thinking Robbie's going to take him out pretty quick. Nick Diaz did better than I thought he was actually going to do. And I wonder, with 6 years out of the cage, I was thinking to myself, I don't think I ever want to see Nick Diaz fight again. I don't think I ever want to see it.
I'm not interested in that.
See, I've changed my mind.
Oh, if really?
It's all down to the mental side of things. If that interview with Brett Okamoto was a classic Diaz sort of just hating the fight game and he's mentally wants to fight, if he actually really wants to fight, as long as they match him up with favourable opponents, ageing welterweights and stuff like that, and maybe they don't have to cut down to welter, but they are ageing welterweights, I'm all in. Don't give him any prospects. Don't give him people that are going to really hurt him like quickly and all that kind of stuff and just, you know, take his shine. None of that. But if you want to match him up against a Donald Cerrone or something like that, I'm happy with it. I don't mind. As long as he is properly training and he's mentally up for it. Because that's the big question for me, is if he genuinely does feel like, I don't know why I'm here and why I'm doing this, and if he was potentially manipulated sort of into fighting, I don't want him anywhere near a combat sport arena. I don't want him near it. I think it'd be very dangerous for him. I don't want him near it. But if he wants to fight, I mean, you're 6 years out of the cage against someone that fights regularly. Mm. I felt like he ended up doing all right.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm looking to my right and I've got a big photograph of Nick Diaz calling in the octagon with GSP, giving it to him, looking in incredible shape. And obviously, yes, that's a long time ago, but I like that era. I was lucky that I got to watch Nick Diaz fight. You know, I was watching UFC then, so I got to see, you know, a lot of his, you know, amazing fights. And for me, when that fight finished, I just thought, I don't want any more of this now. Like, you know, he's an absolute legend, you know, and, you know, I'm happy with an 8 at the moment. I don't need.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Nick, I think, like, he's, you know, he's cemented his glory. He's an absolute beast. But yeah, no, yeah, I don't want to see anything more from him. I just think, yeah, go do your triathlons, call your brother, and I don't want to see him fight Cerrone. I'm not interested in that. It's not for me. Like, I think, maybe there was. We could have read more into what you were saying, you know, pre-fight, that stuff might not have just been him just doing what he does. Maybe he genuinely did wonder why this fight was happening. You know, if you are not prepared to make that weight cut that late, you know, then there's stuff going on, clearly. But like I say, white lasted. It was good. But the ending, I just thought, let's, I think, leave it alone now.
Yeah. I think that's fair enough.
Okay. Well, look, on this card, is there, on the main card, I mean, let's not sort of go too into it. But I know on the prelims, insane Dan Hooker's on the prelims. That shows how stacked that card was. But you've been so overexcited about Dan Hooker this last few weeks, haven't you?
Oh, my God. I mean, I didn't know whether to save this for, because we've got some downbeat stuff to talk about.
I mean, I just wanted to mention Hooker because I knew it was on the card and I knew he was going to reference it.
Should we do the Dan Hooker appreciation section of
the show?
Yeah,
let's do that.
Which could become a weekly thing.
Yeah, needs a jingle.
I mean, it does need a jingle. Oh, that would be so funny. I'd love that so much. So Dan Hooker appreciation moment. I mean, Jesus Christ. So firstly, for 266, he was having huge visa issues, if you're not aware, getting over from New Zealand to Vegas. The guy lands, I think, 2 days before the fight because of all the visa issues. So he's watching the embeddeds that he was supposed to be on in New Zealand at his home and only gets over to Vegas like 2 days before the fight. I'd be remiss to say and not point out that Hack Parasta was having similar things. I think coming over from Germany, I think he had his mother's funeral just before that kind of like fight week or whatever, and he was having visa issues. So he was dealing with a hell of a lot as well. And he only got over with a few days before the fight. So both of them, props to both of them, that was amazing that they were able to fight and make weight after flying all that way and arriving just like 2-3 days before the fight. That in itself is incredible. They fight, Dan Hooker wins, he puts on a phenomenal performance, shows layers to his game. He wasn't just like Rock'em Sock'em Robots, he was using takedowns and wrestling as well. Absolutely fantastic from Dan Hooker. Dan Hooker, go and celebrate, have a lovely time, and then fly home and do that really horrible quarantine that you have to do in New Zealand, see your family, bye-bye. No, he doesn't do that, because he gets a phone call to fight Islam Makhachev, a guy that I think is a champion in waiting. He is, I think, the most dangerous guy in the lightweight division.
How many people do you reckon said no to that before Hooker got the call?
Plenty.
No one wants that fight.
So Dan Hooker, after just having a fight and making weight effectively only 2 days after landing from a huge long flight from New Zealand, he decides to go, oh, do you know what? Fight Islam Makhachev, the proper boogeyman of the division, on what, 4 weeks' notice? Do I get to go home and train with my trainers? No, I have to just stay in Vegas. Do I get to see my family? No, I've got to stay in Vegas. If I don't go home on my allotted time, the way the New Zealand quarantine things work, he's now, I think, stuck in America until 2022. This is huge. Yeah. He's foregoing. Now, thankfully, I think the UFC are doing everything in their power to get Dan Hooker's family over to Vegas and they can be with him for a few months. So well done, UFC, for doing that. And I'm sure they sweeten the pot financially for him as well. But to do that, to take on Islam Makhachev on 4 weeks' notice, when you've not got your full corner here, Eugene Behrman has gone home. He's back in New Zealand now, I think. So he's got like a couple of people that he knows in America that will be like training him for this fight that might have done little bits of city kickboxing before. But this is not a full proper camp for him in length or in the people around him. And he's still doing this fight against who I think is the toughest fight in the division. And not only that, he doesn't even have enough clothes with him. The UFC about to give him loads of clothes. And he said because he arrived only 2 days before, all he did was bring his gloves. So he hasn't got any shin guards, he's got no rash guards, he's got no training gear, he's got nothing. The UFC have had to give him like a couple of oldals worth of UFC branded tracksuits and pads and all sorts. You're like,
I mean, I'm
nuts.
Sure he's getting kitted out, mate. You're making it sound like he's had to go to Lost Property and they're giving him like a pair of like, we got a pair of, oh, hang on, Andrei Arlovsky's pants. Yeah, he left them in the shower room. He pop them on, mate. Like, I'm sure they're not. I mean, he's going to be kitted out in all the right gear.
No, but that's what I'm saying. No, but even that in itself is like, he's had to be kitted out. Like, he hasn't got any of his gear. Like, I know he's going to be kitted out with the UFC stuff, and I know they've got the PI there. I'm not I'm not saying, as you said, he's just getting like Arlovsky's old holy pants. But it's like, but I think that's massive. Balls on the man. So just
he's going, just official fucking badass, man.
Yeah, I mean that's BMF. Win or lose. There's talk of Nate Diaz fighting Vicente Luque next, which would be an amazing fight if it happens. But I tell you what, win or lose against Islam Makhachev. I mean, if he wins, give him a fucking title shot, as far as I'm concerned. Mm. But if Dan Hooker loses against Makhachev, which, let's be honest, Makhachev's going to be the favourite in that fight. As much as for the story of it, I would love to see Dan Hooker win so much. Mm. But the chances are he's probably going to lose that fight, I think. If he loses that fight, give him a BMF fight against Nate Diaz or Masvidal or whoever. This guy has earned it. He is the new BMF of the UFC.
Hooker and Nate, that's a great fight stylistically.
Ah, it's an amazing fight. You know they're just going to come out and sling in and just, it's both really tough as well. Five rounds, that'd be brilliant. But if Hooker pulls it out of the bag, if Hooker can beat Islam Makhachev, give that man a title shot immediately. I don't care who wins out of Oliveira and Poirier. We had a fight of the year contender against Poirier the last time they fought. So I'm happy to see that run back. If it's Oliveira, fine, no problem. Give him the title shot because he would have fucking earned it.
Oh, I really wish we had the play out jingle about Dan Hooker right now.
Yeah, every week.
It warrants a jingle. It's the best we can offer Dan Hooker is his own jingle.
Absolutely.
Well, look, shall we look at something that's been a little bit more of a sad kind of side of MMA? And there's been, I guess we won't talk too much about Chuck, but I guess one of the things that's dominated MMA news really of the recent sort of week or a couple of weeks now, I guess, has been the arrest of John Jones. And
yeah,
it's, I mean, I think obviously me and you are going to be quite mindful as to what we say here. Obviously, we're going to try and reference the relevant documents to ensure that, you know, everything we say is as per police report. And but not good, right?
No. I mean, well, look, just to say, the reason we're not talking about Chuck as much is that I haven't seen enough information out there. There was a story on MMAfighting.com that Chuck was involved in a domestic abuse incident. And then Chuck released a Twitter statement saying he was actually the victim.
That's right.
And he had some like scratch marks and stuff on him where he was actually the victim. MMAfighting.com, as far as I'm aware, have actually pulled the original article down now, which makes me think there's legitimacy. I think I might be wrong. People, go and check this for yourself. Don't take everything I say as read, you know. But as far as I'm aware, they've pulled that original. So that makes me think there is legitimacy to Chuck's claim. So it's very difficult to talk about that when we don't know.
Sure.
What's gone on there? That I've not seen a police report. I've not seen any of that stuff. So, but if someone has seen that and they think we're being unfair and they think that we should be going in on Chuck here, send it to us. And I am more than happy to talk about it on another episode and be as fair as possible to everyone. Because we've also had a situation with Luis Pena at the moment where Luis Pena has been cut from the UFC because of domestic abuse allegations. But we're not really going to go into the Luis Pena thing either, because again, I haven't seen as much information on that, mainly because Luis Pena is not as big a star, and maybe that's why the UFC have found it very easy to cut Luis Pena, but they're not cutting John Jones, which, say what you want about that, whether that's, you know, I know it's a business decision and all that stuff and they want to get all the facts out there, but they were happy to cut Pena to make it look like they've done morally the right thing. John Jones, we're still waiting to see what happens there. But I think it's very important that we do say we've seen police reports. I've also actually listened to the audio phone call between the person at the front desk of the hotel talking to the police. So obviously no one has been found guilty yet. There is no, you know, these kind of things have to go through the right systems, and up until a verdict is given, we would be wrong not to use the word like allegedly.
Yeah, of course.
However, if you do your research into the police report and all that, it looks very bad. And I think what we should do is maybe I've kind of taken a few extracts from the police report, and I wonder if we should say a few of those just to give, if you haven't seen it, just to give people a bit of knowledge on what's been happening. So Jones was in Vegas to be inducted into the UFC Hall of Fame for
his... Well, he was, wasn't he, obviously?
Well, he was inducted,
It was after that that it happened, wasn't it?
It was, evening. So they had the induction. It was for his first fight with Gustafsson, which was an incredible fight, and rightfully goes into the Hall of Fame. Later that night, I think what Jesse Moses, his fiancé, had said was that he went... He went to a strip club and came back in a bad mood. She is down at the reception desk, whatever went on between them, and is bleeding from her nose and her mouth. The police arrived and they were informed that the suspect, being John Jones, had left the property and was picked up by another unit outside the hotel, where he identifies himself as John Jones. And the police then stated that John Jones resisted arrest as he was being taken into custody. And there's a quote that as Jones was being detained, he became irate, smashed his head into the front hood of the police car, leaving a medium-sized dent. That's the quote. As well as chipping off some of the paint of the vehicle. Don't know why that's important. But, he then, I think, joked that... where is it? He joked that he would like to take on all of the police officers and see what they could do, which doesn't go... is, you know, just ridiculous in itself. They threatened to tase him, I think, at that point, in which point he became more compliant. But in terms of the actual situation with his fiancée, Jesse Moses, she was asked if he got physical with her. Her quote was a little bit, yeah. She had blood on her clothing, dry blood on the bottom part of her lip. And the guy at the reception desk said it looked like she had been in a physical altercation. She, again, this is one of those moments where you're looking at someone's impression of the event. But again, the guy at the desk said she seemed too scared to go back to her room, was asking for assistance. And one of what I think is one of the most disturbing things about the whole thing is that she was with her three, her and Jones have three daughters. She was with the three daughters, and one of the daughters asked the reception guy to call the cops. That's what's been said on MMAfighting.com and a bunch of other sites, was that it was his own daughter that asked for the police to be contacted. So, I mean, I don't know what else to say about that, really.
Well, Jones has tweeted, not us, I love how people are imagining the worst possible situation in their heads and making it somehow factual. I never hit my fiance, and our daughters were woken up after our confrontation. My daughters didn't see or hear us arguing. That's really the only thing I care to clarify. Outside of that, looking forward to moving forward without alcohol. It's the first time in my life where I'm actually ready to quit. Glad to have the support of my fiance, family, friends, and fans. So, I guess one of the other things that is a significant thing to come from this as well is Coach Wink, who has basically said that, let's see if I can quote this as well, I said, John, here's the deal. You're like my little brother. You have to stop drinking and fix these things for a certain period of time until you come back to the gym. So at the moment, he's out of the gym. He's not allowed to come in the gym. I felt like I had to do that because ignoring it and expecting different results, as they say, is insanity. He's got a lot of yes people around him that won't tell him the truth. He may hate me for it, but I'll tell him the truth. I mean, that's his coach. I'm not going to suggest anything else around the situation. It sounds like it's bleak enough as it is, but you know, I'm sure his coach probably knows him as good as anybody, really. And to then go, you're not welcome. And if you're a coach wanting to, you know, have somebody and you want to coach a fighter, John Jones, you know, is arguably the greatest of all time. Mm. You don't boot the GOAT out of a gym without good reason to. And so, you know, I guess maybe this has brought it to a real head. It would appear that alcohol is a big factor in this.
I mean, see, that's dangerous for me. There'll be people out there that know a lot about more about this stuff than me. I've never suffered with an alcohol problem or anything like that. I worry that people, well, not people, I worry that John Jones could possibly use this as a sort of excuse. I don't think John Jones has ever come out saying that he has a problem with alcohol in terms of addiction.
Sure.
I've not heard that. If I'm wrong, fair enough. What it means is, I think when he's coming out and saying that, is that he doesn't do well when he's drunk. Like, and yeah. he's and we all know from times when we have been drunk that alcohol can, you know, exacerbate certain parts of our personality or make us make some bad decisions. But if he's had a physical altercation with his wife, this man that is now, God, 270 pounds or whatever he's weighing at the moment after moving up to heavyweight, and is arguably the greatest fighter of all time. He's, you know, probably one of the best unarmed fighters on the planet. For him to put his hands on his fiance, regardless of whether he's drunk or not, I don't think that you can use that as a, oh, it's alcohol, it's alcohol. I don't buy into that. I just don't think it's good. You can't do that. I don't care how drunk you are. There's no level of drunkenness that would make me physically assault anyone, let alone the mother of your children, someone that is probably half his size. There isn't anything. And look, you might know more about this stuff than me. I don't know. I've not been around that kind of, I suppose, a huge amount of drunken violence or anything in my life. But maybe some people can't deal with it. Maybe that is a thing. I just don't think it's I don't think that's enough of a reason to do it. And I don't abide by that as an excuse.
I totally get what you're saying. Obviously, in the nature of work that I do, I've seen ridiculous amounts of people behave terribly because of alcohol. And behave in a manner that they wouldn't generally behave in if they hadn't had a drink. So alcoholism is something that is awful. I think without sort of getting too involved in that, really, and I think sort of looking forwards, really, I think I'm sure more will come out should this find itself in a courtroom. And then I think when we get some clarification of where this is going and clarification and closure as to exactly what happened and if he's guilty of that, then my thing is how the UFC deal with that, because he should be the ultimate inspiration for aspiring fighters, you know, young kids that are getting into mixed martial arts. They should have posters of John Jones on their wall because he's arguably the greatest. He's been in and out of police cars, you know, throughout the, you know, some of the mid to latter half of his career. And, you know, it sounds like he's made some pretty bad decisions, not just talking about this recent one. And I think it's just a case of, like, I do think that the UFC sooner or later have to take a real solid stance on something like this, because when you look at Connor throwing the pallet truck, whatever it was, through the coach window, and Dana saying, you know, this guy's probably going to go to prison, you know, blah blah blah, and you know, this is, you know, he's at the police station now, this is disgusting. And then fast forward a few months and they're using that footage to hype the next fight. I personally don't like that. I think they should. Conor McGregor's got enough stuff inside that octagon that you can use for a showreel. Don't cheapen it and glorify and make it salacious. Somebody with a pack of mates behaving like that. They should have made a real strong stance there and punished him for it. And I think if John Jones is guilty of what he's been arrested for or what's been alleged against him, then for me, I think he needs to be cut from the UFC. If he's found guilty of domestic violence against his partner, I don't see how it would be right for people in an audience to be cheering his name. And
I think you're right.
We've got Greg Hardy fighting in a couple of events.
But that's the thing. That's the thing with all of this, is that if someone's found guilty, I think the UFC will cut them, even if it's John Jones. The problem with a lot of these cases is that, A, the people we're referring to, like the John Joneses and the Greg Hardys of the world, do have a lot of money to get the best lawyers. They can settle things out of court so they don't get convicted. Doesn't mean they didn't do it. They've settled it out of court. Some of the details of the Greg Hardy thing, people can go and look up. Very bad. And also the fact that this woman's been with him for 17 years. She got 3 children with him. Mm. There's not just fear that's stopping her from potentially going to police or going to court or anything like that. There's love. Like, you it's so hard to understand that the mentality of someone in that position, in terms of, like, we can't put ourselves necessarily in that position. You have to have experienced it, I think, to really truly understand it. So it's very, we can never judge that position, to be with someone, have had children with someone, to love someone, but also be incredibly fearful potentially of them as well. And that's what the police report is alluding to, I think. When you read that police report, I think you see in someone that wants to sort of protect her own attacker by some of the language that she uses, but also is clearly very fearful of them. And that's a situation where you go, well, is this something that will get resolved in the right way? Because there's so many hurdles in the way of getting a proper day in court and potential convictions and all that stuff. And look, I'm not relishing or looking at this being something that I would want for John Jones or anything like that. if this has been done, and when you read the police report, it looks like it has, then you want the right thing to happen. You want
absolutely
justice to happen. Mm. And that's all. And that's where this stuff gets really muddy and really murky when it comes to just, I think, domestic violence in general, because you just such a cocktail of emotions of both love and fear and all of these things, and not just fearful for yourself, fearful for your children. What are your children? How is it going to affect your children that their father has been put in prison? That's the kind of things that will be going through the minds of people in this situation. It's not cut and dry. It's not, oh, well, because you hear stories of some people going, well, why doesn't she just leave him then? Or, oh, well, if it really happened, it will come out in court. And it's not always that cut and dry. The world is more complicated than that.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the answer is. And I don't know how it will all come out. All I know is, you know, whenever you see a situation like this, you want the victims of it to be safe. You want children to be safe, both physically and mentally. That's another factor with this.
Absolutely, that's paramount, completely, you know, paramount. And yeah, so I guess, like the rest of the MMA community that are curious is to see what, you know, what's going to happen here. We just got to see what presents itself in the coming weeks, and hopefully, you know, if the right procedures happen, and you know, with both the legal system and the UFC, and and I think that's kind of all we need to say on that, really. Yeah,
yeah. I think we felt like we needed to touch on it. It's been
definitely
big news, and you know, as you know, we the MMA sphere and the MMA world can still be looked at by people outside of it as this kind of lad culture, kind of, I've used the word brute before, this brutish kind
please
of,
use that, you know, again. I love it when you use the word brute.
Yeah, no, but you know what I'm getting at, don't you? This sport that we love and everyone listens to this podcast really loves is sometimes seen through tinted glasses by people outside of it as this barbaric sport filled with thugs.
Yeah.
And stories like this don't do the sport any favours at all. But I think it's important for people that love the sport to talk about these issues and talk about them in a way where we're going, hey, we're not happy about this shit either. We hate this stuff. We want to see, you know, trained athletes in the octagon doing their thing. That Dan Hardy was talking about it, you know, the beauty of some of the violence we see. Yes, it is at times extreme, but there's a beauty to it as well, and we want that. Anything that's going on outside of the cage, we're not interested in. We don't want to back it, like what you're saying with Connor throwing the dolly through the bus. No, we don't want any of that. We want to see these athletes outside the cage, like your GSPs and your Wonder Boy Thompsons and your Demetrius Johnsons, these absolute high-level, brilliant athletes that just seem like lovely, but Dustin Poirier with all his charity stuff, like all of that kind of stuff. That's what we want to see. That's what we want to see. And yeah, so that's I suppose, as you say, that's all we need to say on it. But that's why we felt like we needed to touch on it, to just, you know.
Definitely. Well, we've just hit the hour point, so there's a few other bits I know we wanted to sort of touch on, so we won't wrap it at length. But I just wanted to quickly bring up the Bellator event. Was Bellator 267, was it? Lima rematch with MVP.
Yep.
I mean, it was tight. It was super tight. There's a lot of Lima fans that are saying he was completely robbed. I think Lima looked like he thought he'd won it. I thought it was very, very tight. I think when I first watched it, I did think Lima had it. And then I rewatched it and I thought, right, I knowing the result, and maybe I was paying a bit more attention as to what MVP was doing. And I think, yeah, it was ridiculously close. Had that fight maybe been somewhere else in the world, maybe he wouldn't have got the nod. And I'd like to have seen five rounds, not three.
Well, that's been the big news coming out of Bellator, is as of January 1st, 2022, all their non-title main events will be five rounds. And I definitely think that that could have been and should have maybe have been a five-round fight. I thought it was incredibly close. I think I can see why it was given for MVP all day long. Yep. But then I think I could also have seen that, as you said, if it was in America or something like that and they gave it to Lima, I would have gone, I can kind of understand that as well. It's one of those fights that was just so, so close. And as you say, two extra rounds would have been really helpful in scoring that fight.
Definitely. One of the other things I just wanted to touch on as well, big shout out to Jack Grant, who made his Bellator debut on that card as well, and looked great. So so props to Jack for that. Jack, obviously coming off of that loss to
Ian Garry.
Ian Garry, of course, former guest, the charismatic Ian Garry, who will be making his UFC debut at Madison Square Garden. Obviously, he's not going to do it anywhere humble, is he? Great watching his story starting to kind of build on the social media. He's a superstar in the making, and I think, you know, everybody's talking about him. But obviously, we got to see the Ian Garry Jack Grant fight at Cage Warriors, and at the first at the second trilogy was that, and then obviously a few weeks ago there was what apparently is going to be the last of the trilogy series, and we got to chat to some of those competing, and so it was just a few that I wanted to sort of touch upon. I mean, let's start with somebody who didn't kind of get the result he was looking for, and that was Nathan, and what a lovely dude he is. You know, he's been on twice, and you know, I think we all thought he was gonna maybe nick that one, and he seemed to just run out of steam a little bit, I thought, and maybe run out of ideas a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think Nathan will go on to do great things, become 100%. A Cage Warriors champion. He's very, 100%. Very young. And I'm sure he'll make his way into the UFC. This is one of those things where, you know, a loss can actually be better for you, especially while you're young. Getting a loss and learning. Like, it seemed to me from my, you know, what the hell do I know? But it seemed to be he was so desperate for those takedowns and kind of like quite scared of Wooding's striking.
That rightly he
was
so.
And rightly so, yeah. But he was shooting from quite far out. And I kind of feel like whenever... I think one of the best weapons a wrestler has against a striker that I didn't see him use that I would have liked to. And again, there'll be people that know way more about training MMA rolling their eyes at me even saying this, I'm sure. But one of the best weapons, I think, for wrestlers when they're fighting strikers is faking the shot and coming up with a big overhand right. Because that immediately just makes the striker go, shit. I don't, even if it doesn't connect properly, it just makes the fighter go, right. So when he shoots now, I don't know whether I'm got to block a punch to my face or if I've got to get my hands low and defend the takedown. That, I think, whenever a wrestler fights a striker, should be one of the first things you do. Fake the takedown, big overhand right, just to go, yeah, you don't know what's coming. And then you can shoot in from closer distance, which makes it easier to get the takedown, and the guy's just a bit more off balance, and I think that's always what you should do. And I was surprised not to see that from Nathan. There might be reasons why, but yeah, he dominated a lot of the first two rounds with his wrestling. He did eventually get him to the ground and dominate, but it seemed to be that Dominic Wooden was just quite happy to take losses in the rounds but without taking damage. It was, you know, risk control, positionally not taking too much damage, all that stuff. And Nathan did seem to gas out a bit, and that's when Dominic was able, I think he caught him with a knee on his way in when he shot him for a takedown, and you could tell from that point on it was kind of game over, really. But as I say, I think Nathan will come back stronger. I think he'll learn a lot from this. He's a young lad, a really focused lad, disciplined, a really nice guy as well. And I think he'll do some really great things. But we have to say props to Dominic Wooding.
Absolutely.
And Brad Pickett, obviously, as well, yes. Coaching him in the corner there, doing things at GB top team. So well done to those guys.
Second day on the Friday, again, former guest, the lovely Paul Hughes, what an absolute gent he was, took on Morgan Charrier. What a great scrap. And to see Paul Hughes get that decision, I mean, when he had his hand lifted, you see how much that meant to him. Just literally broke down. And just seeing him just standing in that octagon, you know, all the Irish supporters up in the rafters of York Hall, all just losing their minds. Like, it was just beautiful to see. And I think he's going to be a real problem in the world of MMA, Paul Hughes. I think he's got a great mindset. I really see him going somewhere. I really do. I don't know what's next, whether he's going to go and try and avenge the one loss.
I think he will. I think that's next. I think a unification fight with Jordan Vucenic. Hopefully Vucenic recovers from his injury quickly. And I know they've announced like a double trouble at York Hall in December. So there'll be two events in December in York Hall for Cage Warriors. So hopefully he'll be involved in some of that against Jordan Vucenic, maybe, or maybe it'll have to be something later. I don't know. But that will be some fight when that happens. That'll be a really good scrap, I think.
And before we get on to the Saturday, just props to matchmaker Ian Dean. These Cage Warriors trilogies,
yes.
Like, every single fight is an absolute cracker.
Yep.
There's no duds on these cards. And I know that obviously we've been doing some work with Cage Warriors, but we've not been asked to say this. I think them last two trilogies have been absolutely wonderful. And I think the matchmaking on these scraps, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Couldn't agree more. Yeah, I think they've got a great setup there. Ian Dean, phenomenal matchmaker. And the fights are great. They're really...
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Really entertaining fights.
Oh, and did we get a mention?
Oh, maybe on Saturday night we did, yeah. That was lovely.
Yeah, boy.
But you just made that seem like we are just proper in bed with Cage Warriors. Like, our only connection with Cage Warriors is sometimes we message the lovely Kieran and say, oh, you've got any fighters you want to, we can have on?
Yeah, of course.
And that's it. There's no connection really other than that. But we've just had a lovely time watching the trilogies and interviewing some of their fighters and stuff. And that's it. And that's it. Yeah. And yeah, we mean everything we say. If we didn't like the events, we probably just wouldn't talk about it. But they've been great.
Can we talk about the Hardwick brothers?
Can we? They were just, again, brilliant. Harry in just great scrap again. George doing the business, and it was during George's fight that Brad Wharton, the commentator, said he listened to our episode with the Hardwick brothers and how they push each other so hard because they're brothers and all that kind of stuff. But it shows, doesn't it? And they are entertaining guys, and I can see them doing great things. I think that they've both got title fights in their sights, I think.
Definitely.
So, yeah, I mean, that could be a really fun card if you've got both fighting for titles on the same night. Or maybe what might be easier for them is if they did like a double trouble or something and they were, you know, fighting for titles on separate nights, you just hope that whoever goes first definitely wins so it doesn't bum out the one who's going second. But yeah, that'd be
good. Absolutely. I don't think he's watching anywhere though, is he? I think...
George doesn't watch. George is just like watching YouTube while his brother's fighting.
Obviously, the title fight that night, Sam Creasy, Luke Shanks, little bit of controversy. Shanks seemed to think that Creasy tapped very early on.
I tried to find this video and I couldn't find it.
I've watched it several times. I can't see it. Can't see it. But yeah, and then props to Creasy, who then took the got the finish by guillotine in the third round. And
love fight pass, but that went down. That went down at a really important moment.
I watched it the next day.
Oh, you watched it live? I was watching it live, and fight pass just shut off. I can't remember if it was like in the middle of the first round, and then it came back on in like the middle of the second round. So we were all like, "What the fuck's going on, fight pass? Come on!" But thankfully, so that was it. So they were fighting; it seemed relatively equal. Then when the feed came back, Creasy was like proper bleeding out. Was it Creasy that was really bleeding out of his nose? And yeah, so he was just spraying blood everywhere from his nose. And I was like, "What happened? What did he catch him with?" But yeah.
Okay. Should we have a little look ahead to... What one do you want to have a little look at? I mean, this a day...
We have run over more than what we thought. I didn't know whether to quickly mention the Kevin Holland head clash, because that was big news. A lot of people talking about that and that they felt like it was dealt with badly. Personally, I think there was moments of it that were dealt with badly, but overall, I think the right decision was made. I know it's maybe unfortunate... It's unfortunate because Carl Dorcus has, you know, maybe lost like a win money, and that is a shame, and I don't like that. But the right thing happened. The clash of heads knocked out Kevin Holland. He went down. Now, a lot of people have been critical of Dan Mergliata, the referee, because he made a gesture as if to say, "I'm going to want to see the replay on that." And from what I've heard, the narratives I've heard are, you saw the headbutt, so why did you let the action continue? But my opinion is, hang on a minute. Hasn't he called for the replay because he's not quite sure? Hasn't he called
That's what he's there for, right?
Exactly. These guys move so quick, and it happens quickly. It happened in the Molly McCann fight, where she got a head clash but was able to power through it. Now, Holland was knocked out cold, but it seemed to be one of those knockouts where he woke back up quite quickly and was able to kind of defend himself on the ground a little bit. But he wasn't right.
His eyes rolled, as you could see, as he was going down.
He went down like a tree being cut. He really flopped down. But I personally want to give Dan a little bit of benefit of the doubt, because I think he's called for the replay going, shit, I'm not sure if it was a headbutt. It might have been a fit, it might not, I don't know. That was my interpretation of it. So at the end of so he's got to let the action continue, because it might not have been a headbutt. But then at the end of it all, he's got to go and check it. So for me, I actually didn't have too big of a problem with that. And so I think that that's all right. But a lot of people have been very critical of it, and I don't think they need to be. What I think wasn't great is when they were deliberating and watching the footage and all that stuff, you got all the refs together and all of that. There was, I don't know if it was Mick Maynard or Sean Shelby, one of the matchmakers for the UFC went up and had a chat about it. Now, you don't know what they're saying. Maybe he's just saying, what's going on? We need to hurry this up. Like, the broadcast's got to be over in a few minutes or something. Who knows? But the fact that he's there with the referees talking to them when a big decision's being made, that doesn't feel right. It feels like anyone UFC-related that isn't an official or in some kind of lawmaking capacity or something like that, they need to be away and the refs need to go, this is what needs to happen. And if they need to take their time to do it, let them take their time to do it. I know it's not
fire
the best
safety.
TV. It's, you know, well, yeah, well, I mean, I suppose the damage, a lot of it has been done, but it's just about what's right. What's the right outcome here? Did it have an effect? The answer is yes. So should it be a no contest? I think the answer is yes. And it's that. And I know that there's a lot of people that I really respect that I've listened to their podcast talk about it. They have a different opinion to me on this, but that's just, I just think that makes sense to me.
And I think moving forward, like, I guess it's you know, you can only learn from these kind of weird outcomes and these weird moments in there. And, you know, I think it's great that, that, you know, you can then go back and look at it and make that decision. I think, you know, I guess it's all for the good of MMA and trying to make sure it's fair, it's safe. And if that means that every now and again these things happen, then I'm happy for that to happen.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's fine. Right, shall we move on to... I know that we've got 267 coming up. We'll try and do a preview and post-show for that. Then there'll be 268, which I think is the Usman-Covington card. But the one that I want to quickly just reference, because a huge fight has just been announced on it, UFC 269 is not only going to be an absolute barn burner of a card, but they've just announced Leon Edwards versus Jorge Masvidal on that card.
Yeah, boy.
How do you think that's going to go?
I just hope nothing goes wrong.
Oh, God, don't.
You know, great to see Leon get the big fight, you know, get the payday. And obviously there's that little bit of beef.
A little bit? Free piece and a soda of beef, mate. It's been going for 3 years.
Yeah, I'm well up for it. I think Leon wins. I think Leon's range is great, and hopefully he won't get drawn into a fist fight with Masvidal, because I think that obviously he's ridiculously dangerous there. Yeah, I love watching Leon kick. I hope he, you know, we see a lot of that in this, but I'm just happy to see the fight made, and it's going to be great. And the fact that that's about fourth on the card shows how stacked that card is.
Yeah, I mean, that it's a crazy card. Edwards Masvidal is going to be brilliant. I'm disappointed it's not five rounds. I think five rounds would have actually favoured Leon as well. I know we had the end of the Nate fight and he just got clipped, but I think over five rounds, Leon is a great, great fighter. I think he paces himself incredibly well. I think Masvidal, I think three rounds actually favours Masvidal. I think Masvidal can come out and try and throw everything, just not worry less about his gas tank and just throw it. I think three rounds favours Masvidal. I think overall, Edwards is the favourite to win the fight and should be, and I'm expecting him to win the fight. But I think I would have rather to see five rounds, and I think five rounds would have favoured Leon. But that's going to be a phenomenal fight. And also on that card, just to get you excited about that, I know it's not till December 11th. We've got other big cards coming in the interim.
Yeah,
it's fine. But I'm just super excited about it, because when you look down this card, Oliveira Poirier for the lightweight belt. What a main event. That is going to be incredible. I don't know what way that's going to go. That's going to be phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Amanda Nunes, Juliana Pena. Now, we were saying earlier, Nunes is as like Shevchenko, she's just so far ahead of the other pack. Pena's chatted so much shit. I'm interested. I'm in it. I think she might be able to just... I don't think she'll win, but she could cause her some problems. And I don't know, we might see something special in a Nunes fight, which is the first time we've seen that in ages. Yeah.
I don't think the gap's that big on that one. Like, I might regret saying that, but I yeah, I've been a fan of Penna, and I think like it could yeah. Who knows?
I mean, it's definitely. I think Nunes will be the favourite, rightfully so. But
of course,
Nunes historically struggles a bit more with people with higher level wrestling, and that's what Pena's got. So I think that'll be probably the one of the most interesting Nunes fights since maybe Cyborg. I don't know. Like,
yep.
So that could be really good. Kai Kara France versus Cody Garbrandt. Cody Garbrandt dropping down to 125. Pedro Munoz, Dominic Cruz. Who else we got? Dricus du Plessis, who I'm a big fan of, against Andre Muniz. Ryan Hall's on the card. Love Ryan Hall. Such a shame what happened to him with the Topuria fight, but it happens. But Ryan Hall back on the card. That's what you want to see. And I know you're a big fan. Sean O'Malley is on the card as well against Piver. So, yeah.
Piver ranked below him, right? Is he 15? And
I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
I think he's ranked below him.
I think both of them... No, do you know what? I think Piver might be ahead of him in the UFC rankings.
Right.
I'm not sure, because Piver beat Kyla Phillips when Kyla Phillips was ranked. So if Piver's ranked, he's probably 14 or 15. And Sean O'Malley, I think, is still unranked. But maybe I'm wrong. But yeah, some great... Jeff Neal versus Santiago Ponzinibbio. That'll be a great fight as well. So there's just loads of good fights on that card to get excited about. And everything 267, and then later on 268, will get you your pre and post shows for those as well. But they're coming thick and fast, and there's going to be some cracking cards over the next few weeks.
We're already talking 2022, Blake Harrison. 270 announced. We're going to see the big boys throw down. And,
the big boys and the little boys. It's going to be Ngannou versus Garn, heavyweight title, and the flyweight belt Moreno versus Figueiredo 3. So the big boys and the little boys. It's going to be great.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, look, I'm sure, as you say, we'll be breaking down them cards ahead of them happening in the not-too-distant future. We'll be back to doing what we do as well. Shortly, we'll be getting some new, fresh-faced guests on. And if this is your first time listening, go check out the back catalogue, because you can hear us talking to the aforementioned Volkanovski, a lot of the fighters that we spoke about when we was talking about Cage Warriors, and we've had some absolute crackers from the UFC roster, so we won't list them because there's bloody loads now, aren't there? So just go get stuck in. We've got a YouTube channel, haven't we?
Got a YouTube channel. We're kind of filling that up with our back catalogue of stuff at the moment, so go and check that out. I mean, phenomenal interview we had with Dan Hardy, and that just slots in with all the other great ones that we've had, where we said just check out the back catalogue there. We've had your Volkanovskis, your Tyron Woodleys, Kenny Florians, and the creme de la creme of British MMA as well, with your Molly McCanns, Paddy Pimblett, Arnold Allens, and Paul Craig's, and the list goes on and on and on. So check those
Aspinall,
out.
Jack Shaw. And also, if that hasn't convinced you, Blake did mention Tyron Woodley. If you've ever wondered what Tyron Woodley looks like driving a car with his shirt off in space, go check out the MMA Fan Podcast on YouTube, and it will present itself exactly what that looks like. With indicators clicking throughout as well, you get the full experience of driving in space with Tyron. We're back next time, right?
We're back next time. Enjoy the shows, guys, and yeah, we'll see you later.
Bye.
Bye.